With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct. But most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in, everybody. Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. TireRack.com will help you get there. An unmatched selection, fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Aaron Torres alongside Kerry Rhodes. Kerry, what was Thursday night? Do you have, you know, do you sit by yourself with a notepad? Do you have buddies over? Like what is Kerry Rhodes? Were you at Hermosa Beach where there was apparently a huge Rams watch party? I was at Hermosa Beach on Friday. Had no idea. There's Rams stuff everywhere. How did you take in Thursday night of the NFL draft?
Well, I took in Thursday night NFL draft by watching NBA basketball.
Oh, okay. And so, that's a good sports talk radio host. I'll catch up on the football later.
You know what? I had it on. I definitely was aware of the picks that were coming in, and obviously no surprises at the top, like we talked about last show, where the top three were kind of
sure.
You know, kind of fell in order with the quarterbacks and that deal. But yeah, I was watching the game, man, and going back and forth, and really, you know, really indulging in NBA playoff basketball. But the draft is always special as well.
Well, there's a lot of things that happen on Thursday, really Thursday through Saturday, that we can get into. Mm-hmm. You know, listen, the Penix Cousins stuff is very interesting. I want to talk about that momentarily. But I actually want to start with your New York Jets. You played there forever. Not your team, but, you know, you played there.
I own them. I got sick.
Okay, you do. You okay. You and Woody Johnson. Okay. Can we get Woody Johnson an hour too? Is he free? Is he
available? Absolutely. Okay. I don't know about this time, but next week, for sure, we can get him on.
Okay. I mean, no pressure. But I found what they did really interesting, and it was funny. So my setup was, my mom was in town, and we were out ordering dinner, bringing it home to my wife and everything like that. And we're kind of at the bar, like, waiting for our food when you see how the draft has played out. You see that Michael Penix is gone.
Right.
You see that Brock Bowers has fallen. You see that, okay, Roma Dunze is not going to be on the board. But you see that Olu Fashanu is there as well. And I bring it up because I said to my mom, I said, oh, my goodness. The Jets, and smartly, they traded back one pick, whatever.
Right.
I said, they're going to do it. They're going to make Aaron Rodgers happy, go get Brock Bowers, go get another weapon, when we all know that offensive line was just has been a train wreck for a long time. And so the pick comes in, and you see Olu Fashanu hugging on the couch with mom and dad. And
right.
I don't know if you saw the video. Mom kind of boxed out the girlfriend who went in for a hug. It's a great video if you haven't seen it yet. But I would bring it up because I think what the Jets did was as interesting as anybody in round one. They back it up by taking Jordan Travis late in the draft yesterday, the star quarterback from Florida State, who unfortunately got a very major injury late in the year, where they are in a situation now where, listen, I think there has been a public perception that it's all in on this year, that Aaron Rodgers' opinion is the only one that matters, that he's running the organization, that he's a shadow GM, basically.
Yeah.
And it felt like the Jets made the adult, prudent decisions. We're building long-term. We're going to build the O-line. We have a backup for Aaron. We don't have to scramble if something happens this year. Long story short, I loved what the Jets did this.
Yeah, the Jets did a good job. A lot of times when you have a star player, a player of Aaron Rodgers' caliber, you're going to acquiesce to most of his needs, right? And that's kind of how it works. But as a GM and functional organizations, they make the picks and they make the trades and they do that thing the way that it's going to set the organization up for a long time, right? And so I think the Jets addressed that. I know they addressed the tackle and the O-line needs in the offseason as well, but you know, you want to bring in a guy that can be the cornerstone of your franchise for a long time. You get a left tackle that comes in and protects your quarterback for a long time, then you're making the right pick. So it's a solid pick. His comparable is to another great that the Jets drafted in my time there in the Brickashaw Ferguson. Mm-hmm. So kind of fits that mold, and if he pans out to be close to the Brickashaw Ferguson, that's a really good pick.
Let me ask you, let's just talk big picture Jets. Yeah. I find them to be, I can see where the people that are just down, that have sold all their stock, I get it. I do. It's not one where I think, like, people are wrong if you just believe that this team, this era, with this quarterback, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
I'm not really there, though, because you look at the division, listen, you give Tua all that money, you had previously given Tyreek Hill all that money, you're losing pieces, and oh, by the way, the Dolphins weren't that good down the stretch last year. I mean, I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but they had whatever, 3-game lead with 4 weeks to go or whatever, they end up in the wild card spot. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, and oh, by the way, and I don't say this disparagingly or mockingly, but it's like Tua also stayed healthy, which we really have no track record dating back to Alabama that he can really do over the course of an extended period of time. So right. I'm not rooting for injury, but I'm just saying history says that last year was actually the anomaly that he stays healthy. You have the New England Patriots, which I'm not an NFL expert roster evaluator, might have the worst roster in the NFL. I don't think that's an exaggeration. At least on offense, they're going to struggle.
Right.
And even the Bills, you know, we just heard the Keon Coleman sound about, you know, he gets his clothes at Macy's in the offseason, all that. And, like, right. I think they'll be good, but they lose Stephon Diggs, they lose Gabe Davis, and they are really in a situation where now they're really starting to have to pay the piper for that big Josh Allen contract that he signed 2-3 years ago. So I just sit there and say, I get where people will not buy into the Jets until they see it. But I think I'm a little bit higher on them going into next year than most people.
I mean, this year, if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, as bad as that team looked at times, they would have made the playoffs.
Yes.
And so you can't be too off of them. I think that the injury bug is always a factor. And you have a quarterback and that's up in age, you know, as Aaron Rodgers is, doesn't matter how good he is, the injury bug is always a real threat. But I also think they addressed that even before the draft. They went out and got Tyrod mm-hmm. Taylor, a guy that obviously can steady the ship. If Aaron Rodgers is out any time this year, I mean, it's not going to be Jordan Travis this year to be Tyrod Taylor. And so to have a guy like that that's a proven backup quarterback that can go in and compete and win you games with the defense that the Jets have, they're going to be fine. But, yes, I'm high on the Jets as well, and I was high last year. But this year they've really taken the steps of addressing the things that were the pressing issues even coming into the season last year. So I'm really high on them as well. And as that AFC East division looks right now, how it stands, I mean, I have Miami 1, I have Jets really? 2, and I have Buffalo 3.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So what is it about Buffalo? I mean, I know I just laid it out, but you lose Stephon Diggs, mm-hmm. you lose a couple defensive guys as well as Gabe Davis again on the offense. Is that what the concern is with Buffalo?
Well, the concern with them is I think that window of dominance for them has gone. They missed it. I mean, they ran into a buzzsaw called the Chiefs, and then also another buzzsaw with a healthy healthy Joe Burrows in Cincinnati. Right? Those are two situations where anybody could lose to those guys. So they didn't fail, but that window shrinks really quickly in the league. Other teams catch up. Other teams start to address their needs and surpass you really quickly. So yeah, just right now, even with Buffalo last year, I didn't think they would even make the playoffs. They got on the hot streak last year at the end of the season to get in. But, yeah, I think they're a little down, and it's going to take them some time to get back on top. But this is a good spot for Josh Allen to get to see where he really stands as a player, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, first of all, I think most people that love football would remember, but they were 6-6 going into their bye going into December. They get hot, win 5 straight. But they were a not-good football team for, you know, whatever, 66, you know, two-thirds of the season. And with Buffalo, what I think is interesting, and let me ask you this, did you think after the KC loss that they should have more seriously considered moving on, like starting over with the McDermott stuff? Because a couple things stand out to me. One, it felt like he had lost the locker room about midway through the year. Now they rally.
Mm-hmm.
two, this was the year, like, and I still go back to, you have Kansas City at home. They, yes, we know now that they ultimately won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, it was like they were, what, 3 weeks removed away from losing to the Raiders on Christmas Day. They were not the Kansas City Chiefs of old. And so that's another one where I go back and forth on, because on the one hand, I sit there and say, well, now that we have the hindsight of Kansas City really was that team again, and they went through Baltimore, and they went through San Francisco. But in that moment, it was like, you know, the definition of insanity is doing something over and over, expecting a different result. And it did feel like in that moment, it was like, okay, Sean McDermott, it's great that you won a couple games late in the year to win the AFC East again, to get that number two seed, to get home field advantage against the Chiefs. But you have to take advantage of it at some point. And what was this, the fourth straight, well, third straight year, that third out of 4 years that they've lost to the Chiefs, mm-hmm. fourth straight year that I think you could argue a relatively crippling playoff loss, you know, the 13-second game, the Bengals at home, and now the Chiefs at home. I personally felt like this year, this was the year to make the move off of McDermott. They keep him. What do you think about just that in general?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if it was the perfect time to do it in a situation where it would all make sense for all parties. I mean, coaching staff moving on to something else. I mean, the team's not the same team that he inherited. A lot of injuries that took place for Buffalo last year as well. But it did seem like there was a connection issue going on with him. And obviously from the top, when you have star players that are speaking out in a different way and showing their true colors at that point, that you kind of sense that the locker room has been lost, right? McDermott's a good coach. I just don't know if he has what it takes to get over the hump. Mm-hmm. And we'll get a chance to find out this year, because this team isn't coming into the season with the same expectations as previous seasons. So if he can do a really good job this year and get them over the hump, then maybe we're having a different discussion, right? So that's kind of where I stand with it. And Kansas City, we talk about them just a little bit. It's that team wasn't the best team last year.
Nope.
But it doesn't matter.
Nope.
You get hot at the right time, and you get your all cylinders fired off at the same time, and everybody in unison, and you believe at the same time, you can win it. You can win it all, and that's what they did.
Well, the Bills are the exact opposite. I don't think they believe they can beat Kansas City right now, which is another one. And, yeah, you know, it's funny. 1 p.m. Eastern time, top of the hour, we'll have the Knicks and 76ers, and I bring it up because I get some kind of Tom Thibodeau vibes from Sean McDermott of Thibodeau, okay, great, you take this awful team, he's going to build them up to a certain level, but can he get them over that final hump? And I do wonder the same with Sean McDermott. By the way, we will revisit the Bills here in just a little bit, because just giving away a pick to the Kansas City Chiefs for them to select maybe their next Tyreek Hill.
Right.
Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes in here on a Sunday afternoon. Thoroughbred Racing has a new independent regular, HISA, that is implementing comprehensive reforms, and the sport is combining hands-on care with cutting-edge technology to help keep its athletes safe. To learn more, visit safetyrunsfirst.com. That's safetyrunsfirst.com. We'll come back, continue the draft talk. We will get to the big controversy involving Michael Penix and Kirk Cousins. I'm going to tell you why we're talking about the wrong part of that story. That's next, Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it. Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes, taking you up till 2 p.m. Eastern time. I just found out your brother's a UConn fan. So I got UConn guys texting me, you better break in on the draft coverage to talk UConn if any news breaks. Now I find out your brother's expecting me to talk UConn. Everyone's putting a lot of pressure on me. So
yeah, they're just riding the wave. UConn's winning right now. They're just trying to, you know, trying to put that out there
because
I'm a Dookie. Yeah,
where did that come from?
Well, I mean, early 90s, I was 8, 9, and those guys are really good. And I saw that. I saw a head coach that I was like, he's really fiery. He gets the best out of those guys. They got skilled players. They had Christian Laettner, Grant Hill. I know everybody hates Christian Laettner. I get it. But Christian Laettner, Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, those guys, I was like, I like this. And so I just kind of jumped on board. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hate. I'll forgive you only because, well, first of all, UConn, you know, 99 and 04 ran right through Duke to win a championship.
Whoa.
That's the truth, including my buddy J.J. Redick, who I told you about last week in 04. And then I can't be too mad at the early 90s Duke team because, you know, The Hurley genealogy. I mean, you know, we got the Hurley we wanted, so it all worked out well for us. Just found out Kerry's got you. I think everybody knows I went to UConn. Kerry's brother is a fan, so me and Kerry are going to start our Kerry's brother and I will start our own group chat. We'll exclude you after the show, but I think most of America wants us to focus back on football. Yeah. All right, let's get to the big story. Number 8.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think people are talking about the wrong part of this story. I find the Kirk Cousins response to the pick much more interesting than the pick itself. But I do think we should start with the pick. Number 8 overall, Michael Penix, a 23 soon, like literally next week will be 24 years old.
Yeah.
You've basically drafted him, if everything works out, to be a backup for 2 to 3 years to a guy that you just paid $100 million minimum in guaranteed money to.
Mm-hmm.
What were you? You were obviously, you were watching Knicks 76ers or whatever, but when that flashed across your screen, what was Kerry Rhodes' reaction to Michael Penix going to the Falcons?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you need to know the mindset of the team, right? Obviously, a lot of teams go into situations where you want to address need. They shouldn't have that need. They just paid somebody to come play that position at a high level for a lot of money. So it's not need. Okay, if it's not need, then what is the next step, right? So if their board was best available, then I still don't know if that's the best deal. So I really want to know what the interest level going into that situation, or did Michael Penix blow them away during the interview process and the meetings and all that stuff? Because I think we all can watch and see that this guy's a really good pure passer of the ball. He's had injury issues. All right. You got a quarterback there that's coming off a major injury and is older. And so the fascination around that pick, I would want to get to the root of why that happened. But as far as bringing him in to be a backup or compete or whatever, it really makes no sense.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate because I heard Ryan Clark, who is close with Raheem Morris, talk about this.
Yeah.
And basically, he made Raheem Morris's point for him. And I'm paraphrasing, you know, obviously Ryan Clark has the relationship, not me.
Yeah.
I think the Falcons' argument is, let's say Kirk Cousins was a 10-year Atlanta Falcon and not a guy you just signed this offseason. And he's 36 years old coming off of an Achilles injury and you have no, like, there's no real backup in the building. And so, one, even at 36 off an Achilles injury, you should probably be planning for it anyway. There's really two other elements to it. One, you know, everybody says, well, you have to worry about helping the team this year. Well, who's to say Michael Penix isn't going to help the team this year based off of that?
Right.
And then I think where I stand, and this gets a little bit into the Kirk Cousins side of things, is everybody that's saying, oh, well, I mean, need. Well, first of all, Kirk Cousins, the reason you wanted to be an Atlanta Falcon was because the last three drafts before this one, they took skill position guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like it'd be one thing if, this is like a random hypothetical, but like, if the Patriots had somehow ended up with a top 10 pick when they had Brady and they had no weapons around him. But Kirk Cousins has the weapons. Mm-hmm. And I understand, defense, there were spots they needed. But Raheem Morris is a defensive guy. He obviously feels comfortable with that side of the ball. And you have weapons. It's not as though, well, I mean, you could have taken Brock Bowers or you needed a receiver. Mm-hmm. No, you have those guys. And now it's just about ensuring Kirk Cousins. So that's why I don't really have a problem with it, because they clearly have young skill position talent. And I just don't think it's a guarantee that Kirk Cousins plays 17 games this year either. So when you hear that argument, what does that make you
think? But the guarantee is the part that's the issue here.
Sure.
Because they guaranteed him a lot of money.
Yeah, sure.
To do this thing.
Okay.
And so if you're investing that amount of money into something, you probably want it to be there all the time and do its job. So if you're gonna invest that amount of money into a player, into anything, you want that to be a pretty solid, secure thing. So if you're already investing in the thing that's going to replace him at 8, that's really high. And that's alarming for me. And I think that's alarming for a lot of people because, you know, there's other quarterbacks that come off injuries and, you know, have had great careers. And there's no way and nowhere in hell they would get that money guaranteed. So
sure.
We're talking about the guaranteed part of this whole story. That's the part that's the issue for me.
So I don't necessarily disagree with all that. Here's my question for you. Do other guys in the – put aside Kirk Cousins. We'll get to him on the other side of Isaac. Mm-hmm. But do the other guys in the locker room care? Are the guys that aren't now have a guy breathing down their neck, a young guy, like, wait a second now. I'm a ninth-year vet. I'm 31 years old. I got one or two more years at this. Why, like, do other guys in the locker room care? Again, I don't agree with Kirk Cousins clearly being upset about it, but I sort of understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But as a cornerback, as a safety, as a defensive lineman, and you know, hey,
right,
our star linebacker just retired or whatever, like, do the other guys in the locker room, will they have a fundamental issue with it?
I don't think so. I think when it comes to winning, guys want to win.
Yep.
And the best person at that position needs to play. And that's just how it kind of trickles down. I mean, take a personal story of mine. When I was in Arizona in 2011, I got hurt during the season. I broke my foot. And, you know, I was all about, you know, helping our younger safety go out there and compete and put his best foot forward, because I knew he was going to have a chance to be really, really good in this league and have a chance to, you know, when I walked away or our other safety, Adrian Wilson at the time, walked away, he would probably step into that place. So I was all support and was loving it. He was out there. He's playing well. His name is Rashad Johnson. So he ended up having a really good career after. But he was out there playing really well. I was texting him before the games and giving him all this positive feedback. And I was watching him play and blossom and bloom. I'm like, okay, this dude is getting really good. All right. I probably should get back to being healthy myself now and really focus on myself and get to that point. So, you know, you start to do that and you help the team and you help these guys become who they want to be and achieve what they want to achieve. But again, personal ego comes to play where it's like, all right, he's playing really good. I should probably get back out there and show them that I'm really good as well. And so you start having that internal conflict between your own personal psyche and who you are and the player that you've been. And then you have this young guy that's stepping into that position or getting that shine and getting the chance to show what he can do. And you're like, oh, he can play too, so I need to get back into it. So it's that internal battle within people as humans that – the human element is going to take place where there's going to be some negative energy towards it. And I could see Kirk Cousins having that.
Yeah, I want to get to Cousins in a minute. But yeah. one last question, and this might be a dumb question. But, you know, obviously Penix is the backup, whatever. Mm-hmm. But how much does them kind of being different quarterbacks? I mean, Penix is a lefty. Mm-hmm. Cousins is a righty. Penix a little bit more with his legs, although he's more of a pocket guy. But, like, I think the thought process is when you have Brett Favre and you draft Aaron Rodgers, they're kind of the same guy, so they're going through reps. You don't have to change too much. If Brett Favre goes down, it's okay because Aaron Rodgers is kind of the same quarterback. Like, are Cousins and Penix going to be able to practice the same so Penix gets the reps that he's going to need when he gets in? Or because he's a lefty, do you have to do everything different? Like, that's the one thing I'm a little bit confused about, where it's like, if you have Kirk Cousins and say you draft J.J. McCarthy, say Drake May was available there, then it's a little bit more of a mirror of similar styles, righty on righty. You know, Drake May's more of a pocket guy like Kirk Cousins. Does it impact the practice schedule at all because Penix and Cousins are a little bit of a different kind of guy?
Yeah, you're going to devise the plays to suit that player for sure. Yeah. And so,
there's not as much overlap as
So you'll definitely being a lefty, probably the right side of the field is going to be a little bit stronger for him. He'll be able to see that clearer as a rookie coming on. And so you would make, even if it was game plan specific stuff, to take advantage of his skill set and where he's the most comfortable, they're going to do that, obviously, for sure. I think in mini camps and training camps, OTAs, they'll devise plans for them both to get equal reps because, again, Kirk is coming off an injury, and so we don't know how healthy he's going to be going into those mini camps, OTAs, and all those things. Obviously, he's back and he's throwing the ball. I've seen that, but you know, we don't know, and they're going to be cautious with him as well. So I'm sure Penix will get a lot of the reps early, so he will be, I think, well suited and know the offense and know the scheme going into the season probably better than any other rookie probably would. And you also talk about the Brett Favre Aaron Rodgers thing, right? You go back to best available. They didn't take him at 8. They didn't take him at top 10. They took him at the end of the first round. And so talk about best available.
And he was plummeting Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Of course they're going to take him.
Yeah. All right. The Atlanta Falcons now have two good quarterbacks.
They have two good ones, yeah.
They also have a very disgruntled starting quarterback, and I want to discuss that part next. We will, before we do, let's toss it over the news desk. First time this afternoon for us, Isaac Lohenkron. What is trending, my friend?
All right, Aaron and Kerry, and we start in the NBA, where a short time ago, the Milwaukee Bucks officially ruled out Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard for Game 4 of the playoffs tonight at Indiana. Giannis because of a strained left calf, Lillard because of right Achilles tendonitis. The Pacers lead that series 2-1. Today's NBA playoff action tips off at the top of the hour with Game 4 from Philadelphia between the Sixers and the Knicks, with the Knicks leading the series 2-1. In Game 4 on Saturday night, the Los Angeles Lakers stayed alive with a 119-108 victory over Denver, which still leads the series 3-1 as the Lakers broke a head-to-head 11-game losing streak against Denver. Perfectly summed up on social media by @LakeShowYo, who tweeted, "I don't care who you are, nobody beats the Lakers 12 times in a row."
Fox Sports Radio's Rob Guerra had a very similar tweet that I saw last night.
Actually, you know what? Now that you think of it, I did see more than one tweet relating that exact same line. Earlier Saturday night, the Boston Celtics led wire-to-wire in a 104-84 victory at Miami. Celtics take a 2-1 lead in that series. In the NFL today, the Buffalo Bills have signed former Detroit Lions receiver Quintez Cephas, best known for being suspended for all of last season for violating the NFL's gambling policy.
"I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir."
"Oh, thank you very much."
Anyway, Cephas was officially reinstated 10 days ago, and now he's in Buffalo. Back to you guys.
Thank you very much, Isaac Lohenkron. Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Sunday, Air Tours, Kerry Rhodes, broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. All right, I've teased it enough. Kirk Cousins. Yeah, drum roll, please. Because his agent, who of course is speaking on behalf of him, He had a lot. It was funny. You know, like I said, I was with family. Yeah, drum roll, please.
It's late, but it's there. There it is. There it is. Yeah. There it is.
All right. So I saw about four straight tweets come up about Kirk Cousins' agent. I was like, oh, that was a mass text to the media. For people who don't know how all this stuff works, is that when somebody wants a message delivered, they get it to just about everybody. And so I want to read what Kirk Cousins' agent had to say, really, again, basically on behalf of Kirk Cousins. If the internet wasn't slowing here, I would already have it up. So please forgive me. I'm going to vamp here a little bit and talk a little bit about Kirk. Okay, here we go. Direct quote. Okay. This is the direct quote. Yes, it was a big surprise. We had no idea it was coming. The truth is the whole league had no idea this was coming. We got no heads up. Kirk got a call from the Falcons when they were on the clock. That was the first we heard. It never came up in any conversation. Well, first of all, Mike McCartney, your agent, you're a liar because you said we got no heads up. Then the next sentence you said Kirk got a call when they were on the clock. Okay. I think this is soft and weak from Kirk Cousins. Mm. You got paid $100 million of fully guaranteed money, as much as whatever it is, 180, I think it is.
Yeah.
You're obviously the starter, but you are 36. You are coming off injury. And I think the other thing to me, you just got to town. Like, I'm not saying that the Packers were, clearly they weren't wrong to draft Jordan Love as a replacement for Aaron Rodgers. But you just got to town. To sit there and think that you're owed something by a franchise that you have done nothing for.
Right.
I'm sorry. I think this is soft. I think it's weak. And I know fans get mad when guys like me say this. Kirk Cousins, shut up, get back into the film room, and focus on leading the Falcons next year. That's my opinion, clearly. I don't want to speak on behalf of you, but go ahead, Kerry.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like Kirk Cousins who came into the league and had to compete.
Yeah!
He's had to compete for everything he's had. And so I would see him. I don't even see why this is a relevant conversation.
Yeah.
And why was that tweet or message or
and really
phrase
quickly,
put out?
For people who are listening to us, you were critical of the decision by the Falcons, which is different than how Kirk Cousins himself should feel about it. So I want to continue for anyone that's been listening.
Yeah, no. He's like I said, he's a guy that's competed his whole career. And to be in a situation where he was the guy that would have, you know, came in as the backup and competed and got the job. So I can see where his mind may wander. Like I said, I mean, as a human, right? Like his mind's wondering, like, this is the situation I've been in before. And it's happened in the other way around. Like I took the starter's job and never gave it back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's creeping in his mind, obviously human nature. But again, he just got paid. He just got a guaranteed boatload of money.
They can't
take
it back.
He's the guy.
They can't take it back.
He's going to be the guy. Go out there and play and compete and win them games, and he will be fine. So I don't even know what the conversation about that is for him. Now, as far as the pick, like we can argue about that being the right pick, but just go play football. I'm with you on that take as well. This isn't a big deal. The guy isn't brought in to steal your job. If that was the case, they would have gave you a little less money and let you come in and compete on a 1-year deal, 2-year deal. This
exactly
isn't the case.
Exactly right. No, and I think, and this is the other spin from, the Raheem Morris I heard. Like I said, I heard Ryan Clark, who's close with Raheem Morris, talking about it.
Yeah.
And I know this is spin, right? It's a franchise trying to justify whatever. But I did hear, and I thought this was actually a good point as well, and this is a testament to Kirk Cousins, is, hey, Kirk Cousins, here's the other thing. If you're as good as we expect you to be over the next 2, 3, 4 years, we're never going to be in position to get a quarterback this good ever again. And so, as I said last segment, there's a lot of pieces there. This is kind of built for you to step in, win the division next year. And let's be honest, because we know how this works. You play so many division games against bad teams. This could be an 11-12 win team, not because they're one of the three best teams in the NFC, but because just the way the schedule breaks, everything is built. So I think that's part of it as well. Go ahead.
And the one thing that we haven't even talked about yet, and I'm going to throw it out there, is, again, if it's best available, you take a guy like Michael Penix at 8. If Kirk Cousins pans out and he plays 4 more years of great football and they win, this is another bargaining chip. This is another trade chip as well that they could have up their sleeve.
That's a great call. That's a great call, because I think that's what we forget, is every single year there's three, four, five teams that going into the season you don't think are going to need a quarterback that end up needing a quarterback. Like, I'll just give you a quick example because I want to come back and talk about some other stuff. But like, if the Cowboys had done this, let's say somehow the Cowboys had the eighth pick and they made this decision. And I was Dak Prescott. I know he's going into contract year, but it's like, I'd be pissed because I'd be like, dude, I have gave blood, sweat, and tears for this organization for the last 8-9 years.
Yeah.
And you're doing me dirty like this. Right. And the counter would still be go out and earn the job, whatever. But at least Dak has equity in that building. And I think that's maybe the part. Like Kirk Cousins, we get it. You overcame a lot. You were the fourth, fifth round pick, you know, back up to RG3. We get all that a million years ago. It doesn't change the fact that you just got there a million, 1 minute ago.
Yeah.
I just, the whole thing just, like I said, the Kobe Bryant, soft. It just feels soft to me. I don't like it. I don't know.
A little soft and entitled.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, the cachet that you kind of develop as a player, you know, other players, other teams know about that. So when you walk into a new locker room, you have to humble yourself, though, because guys see that. And a guy like him, like you just said, that hasn't put any equity into that team,
exactly,
coming in with a huge ego, because that would come off that way as well. To people that don't know you, it can. It's not a good way to start.
One last question. Just give me like a 30-second answer. Mm-hmm. We've seen in the past where you sign a free agent, you draft a guy like a Matt Flynn, Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But Russell Wilson was like a fourth, fifth rounder, and Matt Flynn didn't have all this guaranteed money.
Right.
There is no way that if Michael Penix is the better quarterback, like, he's still not going to be the starter, not next year, right?
There's no way.
Okay, that's what I want to make sure.
You didn't pay $100 million for a backup.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes in until 2 p.m. Eastern time. Following us will be Steve Hartman and Rich Orenberger. We'll come back, and the trade that shook up the first round and maybe shook up the AFC title race. That's next, Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes, taking up till 2 p.m. Eastern time. It's crazy. My show on Saturday goes till 2 a.m. Eastern, so I'm always used to saying 2 a.m., and I almost slipped on the 2 a.m. there, but if we were on till 2 a.m., as much as I love talking about the draft, I think we would have run out of stuff to talk about.
The 2 a.m. would have been probably a reminder of that song that we were just listening to, In the Club.
In the Club? In the Club. Yeah.
you had a flashback there, Aaron?
I ain't making it. I ain't making it till 2 a.m. today, I can tell you that much. But now 2 p.m., Steve Hartman and Rich Orenberger will follow us. Steve Hartman is already in studio, vigorously prepping for his show. All right, so we talked a lot about a lot of different things with the draft, and we'll get to more draft stuff in hour two. We'll talk a little NBA as well. But there was one storyline that certainly caught people's attention. We talked about the Buffalo Bills earlier, Sean McDermott, you know, whatever, AFC East, we were talking about the Jets.
Yeah.
I bring it up. Bills were part of certainly what you would call maybe the most interesting trade of round one, as they traded the 21st pick and a couple late round picks to Kansas City for the 32nd pick and some late picks, whatever. I bring it up, by the way, then they traded out of the first round to 33, where they did take Keon Coleman, the Florida State wide receiver, so that is worth noting. But what is also worth noting is that the Kansas City Chiefs used the 21st pick to a year after they struggled. The wide receivers were not good. They took literally the fastest person in the history of the NFL draft combine, as Xavier Worthy is the 21st overall pick. And the Kansas City Chiefs not only plug the biggest hole on their roster, but they do it with a pick from arguably their biggest rival.
Yeah.
Did the Buffalo Bills, who, as I said earlier in the show, have lost in the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years to the Kansas City Chiefs, did they make a mistake? Should they have traded with the Chiefs at all?
It's a little gamesmanship that you're speaking about here. It's tough because, yes, you don't want to give your competitor any advantage.
Like, you were a Jet forever. If the Jets traded back and the Patriots traded up, and you swap picks with them, And then they took the one spot that they needed to continue beating your brains in. No offense, because you guys had a good track record against Belichick. But I, like, would you have been pissed as a player? Like, crap, dude. All they needed was that one edge rusher, and now they just got him, and we helped him get him.
Well, I think that's a long game because we have to see what this guy does.
It will be one of those, like the Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Like, if it works out the way we think it could work out,
exactly,
it'll be like 2029, and we'll still be like, remember when the Bills traded
for sure
the pick to, and they got Xavier Worthy, and Patrick Mahomes is 39 right now, and he just won his 11th straight Super Bowl. So, yeah, sorry.
But, yeah, they traded down, and obviously they switched picks there, but they ended up getting the guy that I'm sure that they wanted as well, in Keon Coleman.
Yep, fair.
And so the conversation surrounding that is we have to wait and see, because I think Keon Coleman should have been a first-round guy.
Stud, yeah.
And so seeing him play and seeing him up close and personal at Florida State, you know, being an ACC rival of ours in Louisville, it's going to be interesting, because I think they both got their guys. And at the end of the day, if they trade down and financially and business-wise it made sense, then that's a whole different discussion, but we got to wait and see.
No, you know, it's funny because I actually don't have as much of a problem with it as others because it is the draft. Like, if you were trading in season, like if you had traded for some reason and you wouldn't have, but if you had traded like Stephon Diggs instead of to Houston, you trade him to Kansas City, that's one thing.
That's a different story, yeah.
But first of all you're doing is trading back. All they're doing is trading up. In theory, you don't really know who they're going to take. And I think the NFL draft has proven, you know, nothing is guaranteed. Like, even if you watch Texas this year, Xavier Worthy was not their best wide receiver. Right. It was A.D. Mitchell who went in round two to the Indianapolis Colts. So, you know, it's funny. It's a great conversation piece. I just don't know that I'm as upset and as furious as everybody else is with it. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. And I'm sorry.
No,
but,
okay.
But the thing about that is I think they both got their guys. And if you're trying to do anything in this lifetime to prevent somebody else from succeeding, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage anyway. So that's my take, and that's what I would see here. Both teams got their guys. You can't try to block somebody else's blessing. You got to do your own thing. So that's how I feel about it.
Really quickly, you just mentioned it. So Keon Coleman, because I watched him, and I thought, you know, kind of a bigger receiver. Mm-hmm. And people say he doesn't have speed, but he returned punts for them. And so I don't think he's a burner quite like a Malik Nabers, but I really liked him, and it sounds like you did too. Keon Coleman, the second round pick of the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, crazy athletic.
Beast, yeah.
Beast. Game speed's totally different than what he ran in his 40.
Sure.
I know his 40 times was a little slower, but yeah, he's going to be a gamer for sure.
No, I thought this wide receiver class was really good. I like Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison, in defense of him, the quarterback play was not good the last year post CJ Stroud.
Right.
But I love Malik Nabers. Real quick, you like Malik Nabers? I mean, not for the Giants, because they don't have a real quarterback, but he's a beast.
Crazy, right? That conversation around them possibly taking quarterback there, I was like, okay, that didn't make sense either.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. But I think he's going to be a great fit. He seems like a guy that's really committed to what he does, too. So I'm excited to see what he does.
Incredible, incredible draft. And we're going to revisit a lot of stuff in round two. In hour two, we'll talk a little bit about Drake May and the Patriots and maybe some Malik Nabers and the New York Giants as well. But I'll tell you what, Kerry, we will come back. And when we come back, we got to talk a little bit of NBA. The Lakers survived last night. We'll see if the Suns do. And the Bucks. Woo! Interesting news. We'll discuss that all next. Fox Sports Radio. Welcome in, everybody. Fox Sports Radio. Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes taking you up till 2 p.m. Eastern Time. We are broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. TireRack.com will help you get there. An unmatched selection, fast free shipping, free road hazard protection, and over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. By the way, I got a nice comment from Sandra on our Hour 1 conversation about Kirk Cousins. She said, thank you both for your comments on Kirk Cousins. I am so tired of hearing sports media folks all boo-hoo over this for him. Do they think this is fifth grade CYO football? I don't know why anyone cares what Cousins thinks of this. Sandra, thank you. You know who does not care about what Kirk Cousins thinks? Me. Suck it up, Buttercup. We can argue over whether the pick should have been made. I just don't want your whining. And not only do I want your whining, You just got to Atlanta 30 seconds ago. Just go out, work the locker room, meet the guys, do whatever it is that quarterbacks do to ingratiate themselves. You know, Tom Brady was having practices in public parks during COVID.
Right.
Go have a practice somewhere, dude. I'm over it. So, Sandra knows what's up.
Sandra knows what's up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's well taken care of, so he's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw producer Ian, who I love, and I'm not criticizing him. He's like, well, Kirk Cousins moved his whole family to Atlanta. It's like, yeah, and they're going to live in a big freaking mansion in Atlanta, okay? Like, no boo-hoo for a guy that got $100 million guaranteed. All right. And by the way, he can retire. I mean, he could just not play and, you know, keep all, you know, not get all that money. I don't think his wife or his family's going to want that either. All right. So, NBA, four games are about to tip off starting right now in just a few minutes with game four of the Philadelphia and New York series. We'll get to that in a minute. First of all, couple things. One, the late breaking news, as Monty just told us, Isaac told us last hour. Milwaukee Bucks will be without Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo in their game later today against the Indiana Pacers. Game is in Indiana. Pacers already are up 2-1. Tyrese Halliburton with that big bucket late in the game the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Is this series over? This series? Yeah.
No, it's over. I mean, a lot of people, myself included, picked the Pacers before the series started. And then
was it because of Giannis's health, or you like the matchup? Or
I just like the matchup. The Pacers are a team that can score a lot of points. Obviously, one of the highest scoring average teams in the league. And Milwaukee had problems stopping people all year, and so just the matchup, and even in the regular season, that matchup was one that gave Milwaukee problems. And so coming into this series, no Giannis obviously will help Indianapolis's cause.
Yep,
but. I just felt they had too much firepower for Milwaukee coming in.
I don't really have much to add because I do think the series is over as well. Yeah. What would it say about the Bucks? I mean, obviously, you know, you trade. I think they missed Drew Holiday, man. I mean, they can't get stops. And obviously, there's the Damian Lillard element of it. There's the Doc Rivers element of it.
Yeah.
But you know, this would be what the really third straight season that they don't get out of round two, because last year they obviously lost to Miami. The year before, Giannis was a monster against Boston, but he just, I think, who was it? Middleton was hurt in that series. Mm-hmm. So, but what would it say about the Bucks if they can't even get out of round one, although there are injuries, whatever?
I think there's dysfunction there. Obviously, there's some stuff behind closed doors that we don't know yet, but it'll come out. You know how it always does. I mean, obviously, for the coach to be fired, you know, midway during the season with the second best record in the East, there's some cause for concern there. I mean, you can even go back to before the regular season started, where they bring in, you know, Dame Lillard's old coach, Terry Stotts, and he leaves before the season starts. And so there's just so much stuff there that's happening. It's almost one of those things where we talked about the Kirk Cousins thing, where you try to acquiesce to the star.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're doing that with Giannis. With his brother being on the team and not playing and not good enough to really be on that team, like, there are some things that are bubbling up there. And so cause for concern for them internally, but even on the court, they never really seem to figure it out this year. And Giannis Dame situation, their two-headed monster, it looks like it should have been a seamless fit, but it hasn't been either.
Let's go to one of the late games today, or the late game today, game four, Minnesota and Phoenix. And we talked a little bit about this last week when I was in with you in this time slot. I never thought the Brad Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant thing would work.
We just have
a track record of, in this era, three guys with no bench. It's not going to work. By the way, the best example of it involved KD in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
KD, Kyrie, James Harden, for all the ink that was spilled, wins one playoff series the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this whole situation interesting. So they're down 3-0, even if they somehow win. It's like the Lakers last time. I mean, we could overanalyze the Lakers and Nuggets, but the Lakers aren't winning four straight to win that series. And so we'll talk about the Lakers in a minute. But even if the Suns win today, this is over. I don't think it's going to work. But I don't know what you do either, because you've traded all your assets. You've traded your draft capital. And, like, I know that in the NBA, like, draft picks aren't as valuable as the NFL, obviously. But you can still, if you're a good team, you can get veterans in the back half, older college players in the back half of the first round that can help you. You know, mm-hmm. Christian Brown last year was a rookie, was a very key contributor for the
Nuggets.
For the Denver Nuggets, mm-hmm. Jaime Jaquez for the Miami Heat this year. So there are ways to get, for lack of a better term, cheap labor in the NBA. But the Suns can't do it. And, like, it was crazy. Yesterday on the broadcast, like, they flashed what those contracts look like. I mean, the big three are all making 45, 50, 55 million a year, like, for 2 to 3, 4 more years. It's not like, you know, Brad Beal comes off the books next year and it's like, you got to get through one more year of this. I think it's over before it started.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling my radio partner Jason Martin last night, I do feel kind of bad for Kevin Durant. Now, he's picked all these situations, but he can't pick them. You know, it's like, you know, you have friends that can't pick a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Like, he can't pick situations in the NBA. And so that's the one that to me is more interesting, because I just don't know what they do to get out of their current situation, and I don't think their current situation is going to work in any way, shape, or form.
Well, KD made the right choice and then reneged on that choice, right? He went to Golden State, where if he's still in Golden State now, they may win a couple more championships.
Yeah.
And so that's that part, right? Like, it's always the grass is greener on the other side, and it's not.
Yep.
And, like, you want to get into a situation where instead of putting in the time, putting in the work, actually committing to something, and, you know, there's going to be down moments in anything that you do. The first sign of trouble or the first down moment doesn't always mean you run. And so
for him
to leave that situation with a little scuffle with, you know, with the Draymond Green and all those things, and I'm sure there was more things that happened during that journey, but you leave that situation where it's, you look at it from the outside looking in, it's the most stable situation.
No doubt.
And you go to something that you want to experience for your life, and you start to regret those choices. And so I don't feel bad for him in Phoenix and the places that he's gone, because that's his choice. But when you look at that team, the way they're built, those three, and we talked about it last week, don't fit. They don't fit.
Mm-mm.
Like, if you're going to have KD and Booker, which they had first, you bring in a true point guard.
Well, can I jump in on that real quick?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I mentioned this last night, and I think this is what's going to happen with the Lakers this offseason, is I think whenever you lose, especially early, I think there's always this belief that it's a disaster, we got to blow it up, we got to shake up everything, right?
Yeah.
But you go back to last year, the Suns actually played the Nuggets tougher than anybody in the playoffs.
Right.
They took two. Now, that's not good enough. You don't want to lose 4-2 in the second round of the playoffs. But when you counter it with, the Lakers got swept, the Heat took one.
Yeah.
You took two,
mm-hmm.
in the Western Conference Finals, in the finals. You were closer to them than those teams were. And that was with Chris Paul, with DeAndre Ayton, whatever.
Yeah.
And I always say, I'm not saying that teams shouldn't try to get better.
Yeah.
But I think there's this thought, and it feels like it's in the NBA more than anything, is that when you lose early, it has to be this seismic blow up, shake up, whatever. And sometimes it's like the little tinkering. And I just think also the Nuggets are a great team. The pieces all fit, and the pieces are all still either in their prime or just entering their prime. And it's like, it sucks. I know that's not what Kevin Durant wants to hear coming out of a season, or LeBron James or Devin Booker. But it's like, you look at the Suns, they actually weren't as far off with the Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton thing, mm-hmm. as I think they probably thought a year ago.
Yeah, we talk about, like, when you put equity in something, you want to see those returns. There's no bigger example of that than the NBA. They're making big investments, and they want those investments to be returned right away. That's not how it works. Even in, you go back through history and look at teams that won, even those early 90 Chicago Bulls teams, mm-hmm. they lost a lot in the playoffs. You're going to break Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan up because they lost a couple of rounds of the playoffs, and you know, in that era where obviously it was a tough era in Boston, and, you know, L.A. and the Pistons obviously at that time were giving them fits. They figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to invest in time, in equity. You have to give that relationship those games, those teams' time to bloom. Mm-hmm. If you don't have patience in sports or in life, you will fail and fail miserably but by trying to run and chase other things that isn't in the cards for you right now. But that doesn't mean it won't be.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, and we, you know, we talk about, and first of all, by the way, you know who's another example of that? The Nuggets. The Nuggets lost. What did they lose? They lost in the Western Conference Finals in the bubble, I think, or whatever.
Yep.
And they, you know, they lost a few times, and it's okay. And they stuck together. There wasn't a massive blow up. It wasn't. And I think the other thing, too, is maybe it was just that previous era of guys where I think LeBron really kind of set the tone. But LeBron was so good that, like, he could go to Cleveland, and in a year they'd be in the finals, you know? But it's not the same for James Harden. It's not the same for Kawhi Leonard, except for the 1 year in Toronto. It's not the same for whoever. And even Kevin Durant, it's like, it's clear that as great as he is individually, there needs to be a structure around him like there was in Oklahoma City, like there was in Golden State. So, I don't know what else there is to say. I just think the Suns are just a sad case study of what you just said is like just rush, no patience. You know, I think part of it's a new owner, aging superstar, but it's like, I'm not saying they would have won it if Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton were on this team. I just think they were probably a little closer than they thought, and they're certainly a little bit closer than they were than they are now. So
yeah, I mean, just structurally, they were built to win. Structurally,
as a team,
pieces
now, fit.
Now you bring in. If, and it wouldn't have worked, obviously, but if, imagine if they had that core right now, and then you bring in another Bradley Beal type for cheaper.
Sure.
Bradley Beal's not a needle mover anyway.
Look at, like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Just fills a role.
Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just that. Like, taking these big swings for the fences is more about the ego of the owner.
I agree.
And that's really what it boils down to.
Phoenix Suns, they are the late game this evening. They will play Minnesota in a win or the season is over game. By the way, we do have one game has just tipped off in Philadelphia. The New York Knicks up 2-1 on the Philadelphia 76ers. 4-4 in that game in early the first quarter. Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes. Tell you what, Kerry, we'll come back, maybe talk a little Lakers. Then we got to get back to the NFL draft. Plenty more to discuss. That's all next, Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes, broadcasting here in L.A. Kerry, what else from the NFL draft? We talked a lot in hour one about the Bills and their trade with the Chiefs, and we talked a lot about Michael Penix versus Kirk Cousins, that little whiny you-know-what. what is the biggest story that we have not hit on yet?
I think the biggest story with the draft for me, it's always seeing the family reactions, you know, really getting to see how guys, a lot of guys' dreams are coming true in real time for people to see. And you have those moments to have those in, you know, in closed doors, cameras capturing these images and these special moments between, you know, the players and their families, man. I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, also seeing some of the guys where they feel like they've dropped or they feel like they've been overlooked.
It's all sentimental and special until you're Brock Bowers and you're going to the Raiders.
Exactly, right.
And you're just pissed and mad and angry and
that
steaming.
Part. Yeah, you get to see that in real time. So I like that. I like that part of the story that really kind of encapsulates the draft, because there's highs, there's lows, there's all those things in between, and there's also moments where you feel slighted and you come out and you take it out in the league. So it's cool.
So let me ask you this. So you mentioned it earlier, and I'm in agreement with you. There was, I think, two narratives that I did not understand at all going into the draft. The first one was, first of all, the idea that the Chargers were going to trade Justin Herbert was the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. You know, anybody who knows Jim Harbaugh, and I don't, but I know people who do, they're like, the whole reason he took that job was because he wanted to coach Justin Herbert.
Right.
But then, never thought they were going to get a weapon for him. Thought they were going to go with whatever was the best offensive or defensive lineman. They do. And of course, Jim Harbaugh then says, quote, "I believe offensive linemen are weapons." So what do you think of the team that he is building? They have, we'll call them skill position guys, since Jim Harbaugh doesn't deem just wide receivers and running backs as weapons, but they've gotten rid of a few wide receivers, clearly rebuilding through the O-line. Defense is, they have the pieces. They just had an incompetent play caller in Brandon Staley, but that's neither here nor there. What do you make of the early stages of the Harbaugh rebuild?
Outside of the quarterback position, the needs that need to be met for a team to be an actual contender starts up front.
Sure.
And you build that way. Jim Harbaugh is old school. He knows how to build teams. And every situation he's been in, he's won. So if I was a fan, if I was somebody like doubting him building a team to compete and to win, I would say pump your brakes.
Yeah.
Give him a little time. Mm-hmm. And obviously we don't live in an era where time is mm-hmm. valued like it should. But, yeah, you got to build up front. And if you don't have the big uglies up front that can control the game on both sides of the ball, you won't win anyway. So I like the pick for them.
Yeah, I mean, you want your coach to be true to who he is. I mean, I think that was the problem with the last guy was Brandon Staley. I don't think he stayed true to who he was. I think he thought he was the analytics guy. Then it backfired. Then he wasn't the analytics guy. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Harbaugh is a run first defense kind of guy, mm-hmm. or you know, a ball control is probably the right way to put it. And it's like, you know who that helps more than anybody? Justin Herbert.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to put up 38 points every game now. And I think it is going to work out so well for them. We talked about the Jets and all these teams that we're excited to see. I would put the Chargers up there with anybody. The other narrative that I never understood, I didn't buy, was that the Giants were going to draft a quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's just because you do this long enough and you know the kind of ethos of certain organizations. And the Giants are conservative. It's the Maras. You know, they're kind of the opposite of the Belichick Patriots, where like Belichick will get rid of a guy a year ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
Feels like the Giants are more give the coach the extra year, give the QB. Remember when it was like the biggest story? Because they wanted to bench Eli, but they were afraid to bench Eli because he had the start streak going. And it's like, well, we can't do Eli dirty like that. And it's just like,
yeah,
if he's not the best option, and I think he probably still was in hindsight, I don't even remember who the backup was. But the point I'm trying to make is that that's just not like the ethos of the Giants isn't to be paying Daniel Jones even a reasonable $30, $35 million, whatever it is, relative to other quarterbacks.
Right.
But it's not to pay that guy and also draft another guy, and especially in his situation that could and probably will take Daniel Jones' spot. So I never understood that. Giants end up with Malik Nabers. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I'm a Daniel Jones. I don't believe Daniel Jones is the guy. So for me personally, obviously you can't make that move right now because it looks like you're wrong.
Sure.
To take a quarterback. So that was my thinking. Not that they shouldn't have taken a quarterback.
I agree, yeah.
So it's that for me. It's if they took a quarterback at that spot right now, you're saying you're wrong.
Sure.
As a GM. And so that I just don't think that would have happened.
There's nothing wrong with being wrong, by the way.
No, of course not.
Own it. Now the question becomes, after that top three, it was kind of a, you know, how much do you like guys now? We know in hindsight, Atlanta really liked Michael Penix,
right.
But you know, J.J. McCarthy had his questions. Bo Nix is a little bit older, has his questions. But I think that's a dumb way to do things, but I think you're ultimately right. I agree that was the thought process. I just think it's a dumb way to do things.
Oh, for sure. If it's not the right guy and you miss, then you move on. And that's the New England way that you talked about earlier, right? They don't sit on that. Like if you prove that you're not the guy, you're not the guy. But I think Malik Nabers in that situation, giving, you know, your quarterback another weapon, a weapon that I really feel is going to have a really, really, really good career. I mean, the guy's mindset is just about competing and being the best version of himself. And I hope that
he's Malik Nabers.
Yes.
Do you know him personally?
I don't, but just hearing the stories of him, and I've seen like interviews of him talk, and it's something you talked about Ryan Clark earlier, where they had a sit down with Malik. And so just hearing him talk and where he came from, and you know, he wasn't always the guy in theory. He had to earn his way. And so I like those guys and those stories. I just hope in that New York market, he's able to keep that same mentality and operate from that space.
Well, I think the talent isn't the problem. I just think it's the guy getting him the ball.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know enough about his background to know if he's like blow up on the sidelines if he's not getting the ball guy.
Yeah.
But if he is, I think we will. it's going to come out next year. So Giants go with Malik Nabers, and the Chargers obviously go with the offensive line. No surprise there. Tell you what, I do want to come back and discuss
what I think is the toughest situation for any first rounder. We'll get to that next. But for the first time this afternoon, let's toss it over to the news desk. Monty Bolaños, who's over there watching 1994 Clippers highlights, is...
She was in it, right? She was in it. Who was on that squad, Monty?
I'm actually watching Keon Coleman's first press conference as a member of the Bills.
Oh, that sound is making the rounds.
Yeah, that's literally what I was looking at. And then I hear... I was like, oh, that's me. That's me. As I'm also watching this Knicks game, because yes, fellas, the playoffs continue today. Right now, Philly has the early lead against the Knicks. It's 15-13 with about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. Jalen Brunson leading the way for New York. He's got 8 points for the Philadelphia 76ers. It's Joel Embiid, 6 points. But it's very early. We'll see how this one goes. New York does lead the series 2-1. We have three other game fours. Mavericks, Clippers. Let's not talk about it because Kerry's here. Mavs lead the series 2-1. Then the Bucks are taking on the Pacers in Indiana. Milwaukee, again, will be without Giannis Antetokounmpo, without Damian Lillard. We'll see how that one goes. And then the Phoenix Suns will try to keep their season alive against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Or the Timberwolves are going to bring out the brooms. That's the last game for today at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. On the ice, there is a possibility of a sweep as well. Four game fours in the NHL as well. They're going through round one of the playoffs. The Rangers are going to try to close out the series with the sweep against the Capitals. The puck is set to drop at 8 p.m. Eastern time for that one. We got a lot of baseball that's about to start. And how about this, guys? Sonny Vaccaro told TMZ Sports that he thinks that Caitlin Clark's people dropped the ball, that her deal with Nike should have been just as good as Michael Jordan's, that he is surprised it's only 28 for $8 million, and he thinks she should have gotten a piece for basically everything, just like Michael did.
Yeah.
And he says that her people dropped the ball, and then Nike took advantage so that everybody else kind of like stopped trying. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, no, it should have been more, is what he's saying.
Wow. That's market negotiations. You got to get Adidas involved.
Right.
And One still makes sneakers.
Yeah. And One! I love Dan One.
You don't want to hoop in those, though.
You don't want to hoop in those.
You talk about toe bleed?
Yeah. No. It's been a while.
Did Big Baller Brand put in an offer for Caitlin Clark or what?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I don't think they have the cash.
The cachet.
Both.
Depends on if LeVar is going to take out a loan from LaMelo or not. But
oh, man. Is he on the market for that?
LeVar?
Yeah.
Or LaMelo?
LeVar.
Well, I think LeVar's just chilling. So, no. You guys don't know this. That was how I got in at Fox Sports Radio. So, I'm a College Hoops guy.
Yeah.
And I knew that family since Lonzo was probably a sophomore. And so... So I just became like the guy whenever LeVar said something crazy, they were like, Torres, what do you think about LeVar saying whatever? And I'd be like, that's LeVar.
That's kind of a flex.
No, it was. Ask Jason Smith. Jason Smith called me the LeVar Ball Whisperer.
Oh.
Actually, Mike Harmon was just here. He could have confirmed that. But Big Baller Brand did not go...
According to plan.
That's the nice way to put it. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Monty. Real quick, do you have any big Caitlin Clark takes?
No, I mean, I think what Monty just said, it's funny because I just watched the King Richard movie last night. And so when Venus was on the market to sign with Nike, Nike offered her a $3 million deal. So for a 14-year-old girl and their family coming from Compton, $3 million sounds like a lot. And you're like, I should probably sign this deal. And this is before her first actual professional matches. She won the first one, came back and won it. And they, you know, they upped the deal to $4 million. And her coach at the time was like, "You should take this deal." Like they're not getting this, and they held out. She loses to Arantxa Sánchez Vicario in the next round, but plays really well. And next thing you know, she walks out, and all these girl fans, these little girls, and you know, black girls, and just girls all over the world are like celebrating her.
Already, yeah.
All the other brands came to the table, and at the end of the day, she signs with Nike. The number was, I think it was, end up being $18 million.
Wow.
So they tried to sign the deal, say it was on the table for 24 hours. They cut the deal. She ends up making a lot more money in less than 8 months. And so wait it out, make your money. Caitlin probably could have done more for sure if that was the deal back then. So, yes, I think it was a misstep. Like Vaccaro said.
But do you have any takes on like what she's going to do for the WNBA? Yeah. Do you like? Are you team Caitlin Clark, anti Caitlin Clark, or no?
Oh no! I'm a fan of what she does. Sure. I think she's a brilliant basketball player. I do caution people saying she's the best ever, because I just don't think that's an accurate depiction of her yet.
I agree.
But she can be.
Yeah. And I say this unbiasedly, but yeah. even as a UConn guy, like, obviously I probably watched more women's basketball as a kid than most people. I do think it bothered me a little bit that, like, people were basically, I think the insinuation was, like, she elevated the, like, there have been a lot of women before her that have really helped get to the point where Caitlin Clark can have the stage that she does now. Mm-hmm. And it's not just UConn girls. It's, you know, Rebecca Lobo, certainly from UConn, Diana Taurasi, but Candace Parker, Shamiqua Holzclaw.
A lot, yeah.
And so that was the only thing that bothered me was, and that's society right now, right? Is like, everything that's happening in the moment is the greatest thing ever, and yeah. everything that's happened before doesn't matter. So anyway, really quick. Want your take. So you, we talked about this last week. You played for the Jets, played for Mangini. You know the Belichick tree well.
Mm-hmm.
And I am worried for Drake May in the Patriots. And let me just really quickly, I brought this up to my partner last night. I thought it was a great point. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, surprise, surprise. You look at all six quarterbacks that were taken this year
mm-hmm.
in the first round. And I think you can all argue that it is a semi-advantageous situation for them, except for one. So let me lay it out. Caleb Williams, okay? Defensive head coach, whatever. But they draft Roma Dunze. They sign a bunch of guys. They clearly want Caleb Williams to work there.
Yes.
Number two, Jaden Daniels. Defensive head coach, but Cliff Kingsbury is there. You'd assume that really, you know, Kingsbury's going to run the offense. Dan Quinn's going to be hands-off.
For sure.
So then you go to the back half. Michael Penix. Do we like to pick? Do we not? He's a backup. He's got time to develop. Whatever. You have J.J. McCarthy, obviously great situation. Justin Jefferson, my Minnesota Vikings, whatever. And, of course, Bo Nix, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Well, Sean Payton, whether you like him, whether you hate him, and maybe we touch on Sean Payton in the final final segment, Sean Payton is pretty good with quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
The one guy that I did not mention, Drake May, who's pretty much the youngest and probably needs the most work, is going to the defensive culture with no weapons, first-year head coach, defensive guy who came up under Belichick. I'm worried about him. I'm not saying he can't work because there's so much of a track record of just not knowing in the draft process, but I do worry about Drake May in New England.
Yeah, and we've seen New England try to deviate from having the top-tier, top-notch athletes on the offensive side of the ball for a long time. They've managed that well when you have a guy like Tom Brady at the helm. So I think that's been their approach. Now, he's not going to be able to succeed in that situation, and it's just not going to happen. So they're going to have to bring weapons around. But right now, he's definitely in the toughest spot. And, yeah, they're going to be in the bottom of the AFC East for sure right now.
Yeah, it's really funny. I remember I was on air, old studio next door, with Arnie Spanier
mm-hmm.
the night that the Patriots lost to the Titans on Wild Card Weekend. It was Brady's last game. And I remember sitting there like, wow, this guy's washed up, can't do this, can't do that. And then in like one game in Tampa with Mike Evans, with Chris Godwin, with Antonio Brown at the time.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, he's still awesome. They just had nobody there. And it hasn't improved. And then my question for you, like Jerod Mayo, I don't know if you played with him or you know him or whatever,
yeah.
but independent of whether you know him or not, my concern is we can say, oh, it's a fresh era, and he's going to say all the right things,
mm-hmm.
but he's a Belichick guy that essentially that's all he knows. And so I don't really know how much like that culture is going to change, the way things is run is going to change. Like, do you think that's fair to say?
I think it has to change.
But do you think he, not that he's capable, he's clearly yeah. capable, he's a smart guy,
sure,
all that, but
for sure.
If all you know is one way and one thing, mm-hmm. to do like a 360, which is kind of what has to happen in New England right now, do yeah. you think, yeah, yeah, just go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to deviate from that. But for him personally, I hope he does, because he's going to have to infuse that organization with some more energy and yes. his way of doing things. Because if you're essentially in a situation where, let's take, for example, the Duke situation, right, where Coach K was there forever, and you bring on one of his disciple players, John Shire, and, you know, Coach K still has an office there, like, that looming over you will create that situation where it stays the same.
Sure.
But I see with Bill Belichick being out the door, being gone, it's a chance for Mayo to implement his type of play, mm-hmm. his style, and hopefully start fresh from there, because they're going to need it. And I think that's probably the right way to approach it.
Well, and the one thing, too, is the most important thing is you have support from the guy yes. upstairs. The boss clearly wants things to change.
Yes.
And so we'll see if they do. But, yeah, I think it's a tough spot for Drake May.
Yep.
We will see. I think of all six quarterbacks, usually because, you know, usually guys taking that top four, top five, top six, even top 10, you're kind of going to a bad situation,
yep,
whatever.
Yep.
And I think most of them are headed to at least a decent situation, except for Drake May. I was going to say, except for Jerod Mayo. We'll see about that. Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes taking you to the top of the hour. We'll come back. One more draft thought and some great sound from last night that you got to listen to. That's next, Fox Sports Radio.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of... Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're
a
figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Come on, Aaron. I know what you're saying.
I actually don't know the words to this song. I do like the background. I'm sorry, I'm not... I've said this before. People make fun of me. I'm not really like a huge music guy.
Oh.
Like when I listen, when I get in the car, I listen to radio or sports podcasts. Yeah. Like,
there's no. Oh, I don't even know the words.
There you go.
I said the wrong lyric.
Oh my God, Torres, let loose. Just be yourself. Nobody's listening.
Hey, now you got to go for it, Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great song.
You blew it!
Whoa! Chris Perfett firing shots. All right, one more NFL draft take before we get out of here.
Yep.
Only quarterback we really haven't... Well, we didn't talk much about Jaden Daniels, but Bo Nix and Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So, another one that, like, I feel like everybody was kind of in their mock drafts projecting Bo Nix to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because, hey... You know, they're not going to get one of those top three guys, but they need a quarterback. Then they trade for Zach Wilson during the week. Well, Zach Wilson's clearly not going to be your starter.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a little bit of, like, I saw a little pushback on the decision. I didn't really get it because I thought they were always going to take a quarterback. But just in general, your thoughts on Bo Nix, but also, of course, the rebuild that Sean Payton is in the middle of this year in Denver.
Yeah, Bo Nix is a success story to me.
I agree.
Seeing him in Auburn, I didn't think the kid can throw the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was bad, and he was very heralded coming in. But seeing him there, I thought his career was over. So to go to Oregon and revamp his career and be a first round draft pick is an amazing story. Now, as far as Sean Payton and that rebuild and what he's trying to do and build in Denver, I'm not a Sean Payton fan. I think that he feels that he's the smartest guy in the room all the time, and he doesn't try to hide that at all.
Sure.
So it's like one of those things where, Sean, humble yourself. You didn't outsmart everybody. People, like you just said, in the mock drafts had you taking Bo Nix. He's like, I tricked these other guys to think that I'm going to move up to take another. No, we know who you like. So just relax and rebuild your team. So just for me with the Sean Payton stuff, I hope him well. I hope that they do okay, but for him personally, he just needs to calm it down a little bit.
Well, it's tough because I like guys and girls that are like 100% themselves and 100% honest.
Sure.
And so like when he comes out and publicly is like, hey, Russell Wilson, stop kissing babies and doing whatever.
Yeah.
And then what did he say? He was like, we were the worst coach team I've ever seen last year. Yeah. I sort of like it. But I do think there's some stuff that you should keep under the hat. And I'll say this about Sean Payton is I think there's probably a little bit of arrogance just in taking this job to begin with, where you won a Super Bowl with the Saints. You know, you had a couple nice playoff runs after the Super Bowl run. But you take a year off and like I get all these guys want to get back into coaching. But it's like, dude, you're working at Fox a couple days a week. Probably got a nice little condo in Manhattan Beach. You know, it's like and I get you want to work again, but we knew that the Chargers job was probably going to open this year. And we just knew there were going to be better situations than Denver. Now, I understand, you know, whatever, $20 million, $25 million, whatever the Waltons are paying them. But that just felt like just taking that job in and of itself, it was kind of arrogant in its own right. You know what I mean? Yeah. It'd be like if Urban Meyer was retired and he wanted to get back into coaching and he took like the, you know, the Texas Tech job or something. You'd be like, dude, Texas Tech, like, what, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's kind of like what Sean Payton did, you know?
Yeah. No, it's, you're right.
What do you think about Urban Meyer, Texas Tech?
I was just about to say, oh my God. When you said Urban Meyer, I was like, ooh. Yeah. It's crazy. That, just the negative connotation that goes around with him now. And, you know, before trying to make that leap to the NFL, we thought he was the best coach ever, right? So it's just how the mighty have fallen.
They fall really quick. Speaking of falling quick, so the New Orleans Pelicans are down 3-0 in their series against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Did you see what Charles Barkley said after the game last night? Okay.
I did.
So for people who didn't, it is a pretty common refrain. By the way, we do have one NBA game going on right now. Philly up 29-21 early in the second quarter. But as anybody who's watched Inside the NBA knows, very common refrain when a team loses, they say, what are you doing? 1, 2, 3, Cancun.
There you go.
In other words, season's over, hit the beach, the season's done. Well, the Inside the NBA crew asked Charles Barkley what is next for the New Orleans Pelicans after they fell down 0-3. Here's what Charles Barkley had to say.
Disappointed New Orleans. Where they going, Chuck?
Galveston.
That dirty ass water. We're not even gonna send them to Cancun. We're gonna send them to Galveston where that dirty ass water be washing up on the shore and you people think they're in the beach. Y'all gonna send y'all to Cancun. Y'all drive y'all and y'all quit. Drive your ass down to Galveston. Come on, man.
So they're not taking a little.
Come on, they need to try, man. No, we're not getting them no plane ticket to the beach. We send their ass to Galveston, Texas, right where that dirty water washed up on the beach. They can't even get in the water. Come on, man.
Dude, that is so good. And first of all, I said this last night, is like when you get the full chested laugh from Ernie Johnson.
Yeah.
Because Ernie Johnson's the professional and he'll chuckle.
Yeah.
But I was dying when I heard it. Old school Barkley. I loved everything about it.
Man, that show when it's really going is just the best show.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's allowing these big personalities to just be themselves. Yeah. And it's great TV, man. And Ernie's the best.
Ernie's the best. Chuck is the best. They're going to Galveston. Not sending them to Cancun. They don't deserve a ticket because they stink and they quit. We're sending them to Galveston. Four games today, as we said. Philly and the Knicks is in the second quarter. You got any bold predictions on Dallas Clippers later today? Monty, if you have time to turn on your mic, you can hop in on this one.
Monty, earmuffs. Yeah. Earmuffs. Yeah. This.
No. Go ahead. What you gonna say?
I've said it before. I mean, this series was a Dallas series, and I picked six, but now I think it's over in five.
Oh,
I do. So I think
he's choosing fighting words.
do the Clippers deserve a trip to Cancun or Galveston after this?
Well, weekend? they're on the West Coast, so we can send them to
Palm Springs.
They'll be going to the hospital.
There you go. Right, club bed. Yeah. One of those things. Yeah, but no, they're It sucks, though. I mean, it's four Hall of Fame players that I really enjoyed watching, but it's over for them.
No, it's not. Kawhi's not playing, so we're going to win.
Carl's bad with all the traffic. Yes.
Exactly.
Did you just say you've enjoyed watching them?
I've enjoyed watching them this series because it's advantageous for
but
us.
But how often do you ever get to watch them?
Huh?
How often do you ever get to watch them? They're never on the floor together.
This series.
Well, yeah, but that's been one game.
I know.
They're terrible.
And I know, but it's good for me. Do you understand the logic
here,
Bo?
Yeah, I get it. Okay. I mean, I understand.
Remember that,
it,
like, yeah. 1 month stretch where they were awesome with James Harden? Everyone's like, the James Harden experience. Wow, it's working. It's like, just give it a little. Sorry, Monty. Just give it a little bit.
Worked about as well as the 2024 Lakers have.
The good news is we'll see Kawhi in the Olympics.
That's another thing. Embiid, Kawhi, yes. Anthony Davis. It's like, dude, if you can't play like four straight regular season games, AD played a lot this year.
Yes, he did.
But you can't be playing in the Olympics. Anyway, Kerry, man, awesome again.
Aaron, always,
appreciate
brother.
It. Appreciate Monty and Isaac. Appreciate producer Bo. Appreciate Chris. Coming up next. Rich Orenberger, Steve Hartman. Steve Hartman's like a horse in the racetrack ready to go. He's coming in next. Fox Sports Radio.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.